Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
Welcome back, Tokers and Tokettes. It's Tuesday, May 3rd. I'm hanging out in this beach resort, Hollywood Beach, Florida. So glad you could join us here on the show. I've been a little aggro today. Got to admit, it's not my best of days. I had one of the front desk clerks threaten to punch me in the mouth, so that's got me a little riled up. I have never experienced service so bad as what I've experienced here at the historic Hollywood Beach Resort. I guess it's no surprise they've got a 1.5 star rating on Yelp. But yeah, if you want to check that out, see what I've been dealing with, just follow my Facebook page out at Radical Russ on Facebook. You can learn all about that. Coming up here in hour two, we've got some more highlights from the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. All of the information you need to know if you want to become a licensed business operator in the state of Oregon. Coming up after the first break, we've got Leland Berger, one of the leading attorneys in the state of Oregon. I was going to say criminal defense attorney, but he's more than that now. He's doing business consulting, so I guess I just say attorney. One of the leading attorneys there in Portland, Oregon, Leland Berger, will be speaking coming up to the first break, leading up to our 20 after. Then that'll be followed by Pioneer Pete. He's one of the leading extractors in the state of Oregon in the medical side, now transitioning to the recreational side. He's got a lot to say. And then we'll follow it up with Anthony Taylor, one of the leading medical marijuana advocates in the state of Oregon. He's been doing great work for years and years. And we get his take on how recreational marijuana legalization needs to embrace and be able to work alongside of the medical marijuana industry. So all that coming up here in hour two with our special Oregon Marijuana Business Conference edition of Toker Talk Radio. But in the meantime here, I want to give a shout out to @policyconcerns. On Twitter. I've been going rounds with this guy on Twitter who thinks that we should keep marijuana illegal. Just one of these typical Twitter battles that I go through. And it's funny because this guy brings up the, because anytime I'm confronted by these guys, these anti-pot, you know, crusaders, I always bring up the point that if you think prohibition is so awesome, if you really think you can stop people from smoking pot in order to maintain some sort of social order, why don't you ever advocate for ending or abolishing or repealing the 21st Amendment? Why don't you advocate for reinstating alcohol prohibition? And his answer, he comes back with his answer. He says, alcohol had millennia of mainstream use and centuries of established brands and commercial distribution. Pot hasn't. Do you really get what they're saying when they tell you that? What they're telling you right there is that it's a culture war. That we can't go and ban alcohol because, oh gosh darn it, it's too late. Oh, gee, it's just too late. We just have to accept all the drunk driving accidents, the domestic violence. We just have to accept it because it's been around for millennia and there's been centuries of branding. It's just too late. There's just been too much time. So that means that they think that marijuana prohibition is a case of nipping it in the bud. That if we just catch it early enough, we can stop it. Well, guess what, guys? It's too late already. There are 28 million of us that are using marijuana in this country. 28 million. It's too late. We've had marijuana culture in this country since Louis Armstrong, for fuck's sake. You're not stopping it. So the only thing you're doing is adding misery to this country by trying to ban the people that are using it. And thanks for admitting that it is a culture war.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Keep your cannabis cravings under control. Feed your mind with CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat? More flavor.
Chronicling the latest cannabis industry news and headlines.
Well, with four states with tax and regulate and the District of Columbia.
The state of cannabis.
Oh my God, it's refreshing. We have people that generally wouldn't speak on behalf of cannabis for fear of retribution, fear of losing your practices, fear of many of those things, and find ourselves in a place that we finally can.
Bringing you fact-based news and views and keeping listeners on the pulse of what's happening in the industry today. The State of Cannabis. On demand anytime, only on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I do not like them, Sam. I am. I do not like green eggs and ham.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games? Consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's almost 9 after the hour, and we bring you more from the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. Took place last weekend in Eugene, Oregon, and some of the top experts in the state of Oregon opined on the state of Oregon medical and recreational marijuana legalization. Coming up next, we've got Leland Berger, one of the leading cannabis attorneys in the state of Oregon, and his opinion on the state of extracts, cannabis extracts in the state of Oregon under marijuana licensing. Enjoy.
Next is Lee Berger to speak about extracts.
Hi. I want to segue a little bit into extraction by talking about a little more about the processing stuff, if I can, or the concentrates. And also about the dosage limits. You know, one activist who's not here, who's a lawyer, is Amy Margolis. And despite the differences that many of us have with her on many policy decisions, she, at the medical Rules Advisory Committee really stood up for us on these dosage limits. And basically what happened was the health authority tried to find a balance between Amy's arguments and the arguments from a group that showed up, you know, at the very last minute with the OLCC, the pediatric emergency room physicians, who are all, what about the children? And, you know, so OLCC or OHA has struck this balance. I'm hopeful that they, you know, with adequate public comment, we might be able to move them. But I think at least in the short term, we may well be stuck with what are the lowest dosage limits anywhere for adults. And it's just going to be one of those things, as many legislators certainly tell me, that, you know, we just need to wait and it'll be phased in. About 10 days ago, I was in Baltimore at the Patients Out of Time conference, and on the day when Pennsylvania signed the medical marijuana law and became the 24th medical marijuana state, in Pennsylvania, they're going to study whether to have flowers for 2 years, and then they'll begin to implement that. So the fact is, we are moving at a fast pace. I know it doesn't feel that way sometimes, but it is. The second thing I wanted to mention was about concentrates, is that on the homegrown, you know, the 4 plants, 8 ounces that all adults are allowed to cultivate, we're also allowed to create and share concentrates. When we were drafting Measure 91, I called this the I want, you know, when we have a potluck dinner, I want to be able to bring dessert, right? So it's really there isn't any prohibition on that. What there is a prohibition on is on extraction. And it's an unfortunate reality, because the reality is that hundreds, perhaps thousands of patients and growers were safely blasting butane hash, and a couple of idiots blew up houses or a bathroom at a gas station. And it's the kind of thing that created a place where the legislature reacted to it the way that we created the Medical Marijuana Act, which is that if you have a license, then you're accepted from arrest and prosecution. But if you don't have a license, it's still a serious crime. In fact, in the classification of crimes that both Floyd and I spoke about, the one exception is the unlawful manufacture of marijuana that involves involves unlicensed extracting. And that went into effect because, although we used to, back in the day, only use the emergency clause, which makes a law effective on passage when it really, no kidding, was an emergency, now the legislature does it all the time so that we can't do a referendum, basically, is the only good reason for that. And so that went into effect March 1st, that you couldn't process unless you had a license, except nobody could have a license because they weren't accepting applications until April 1st. Anybody here get caught in that clusterfuck? My God, how fast are things moving when the legislature, intending to not make you a criminal, makes you a criminal? So I was involved a little bit as a part of, I'm legal counsel for, I think it's the Oregon Extractors Association, in trying to resolve that, to make it so that it was like, you know, being a patient, that upon application, and then of course, since it's the OHA, they made it completed application, then you have the protection of the law. But, you know, that was a huge problem. Speaking of law violations, just to go a little off topic if I could, you know, one thing I've been trying to do over the last 5 years is to transform my practice from, you know, Cedar mentioned that I had represented, I was honored to represent him years ago. And, but, you know, I don't like really doing criminal stuff anymore. And the reason I did work for 20 years to end cannabis prohibition was to get out of doing criminal law, to be able to sit around the table and conspire about how to cultivate and extract and distribute legally, instead of hearing sad stories from nice people about how, you know, their interaction with the government included a raid in their home. And but lately there's been an uptick in my practice of driving under the influence of cannabis. So I want to remind everybody that it's against the law to drive under the influence of cannabis. Floyd also mentioned that we included in the Measure 91 three times that the Measure 91 made no changes to the medical law. We also included that it made no changes to the driving under the influence law. We gave that to the OLCC, and the OLCC is required to report to the legislature in 2017. And my good news for today is that I think they're likely to recommend that that policy be continued, and that we're not likely to become a per se state where they take you and forcibly draw your blood. I'm really hopeful about that. Thank you. But you know, driving under the influence doesn't mean, you know, I'm all fucked up. It means that you are impaired to a perceptible degree. It means if you look like you're really impaired, then it's a problem. And in the cases, what I see are these sorts of problems. And so here's my free legal advice about driving under the influence. The first is STFU. Does everybody know what that means? It means shut the fuck up. Because, and actually my friend Jeff Steinborn, who's kind of like the dean of cannabis lawyers in the Northwest, he's graduated from Yale Law School in 1969, he's in Seattle. What he says to tell the officer is, my lawyer said he'll charge me double if I speak to you. As much as I'd like to answer your questions, I can't afford to. That puts everybody at ease. The second thing is, you know, all of us cannabis criminal lawyers have for years been saying, yes, P, no, DRE. What happens is you are invited to take field sobriety tests. If they determine that they have probable cause to believe that you're under the influence, they take you to the station. They ask you to take a breath test. If it blows 00, they ask you to provide a urine sample. As with the breath test, if you don't provide a urine sample, your license is suspended. You have a right to an administrative hearing, but unless there's some illegality by the police in the way that they obtain the sample, the suspension is likely to be upheld. All that the urine testing does, however, is show past use. It doesn't quantify when you had previously used. The drug recognition exam is problematic, and it's complicated, and it's certainly way beyond the topic of this conversation, but generally, the advice that criminal lawyers have is you have a right to refuse it. That right cannot be held against you, and it's okay to refuse the DRE. I'm trying to think. I think I'm pretty comfortable. One really exciting thing that the legislature did in response to the medical industry is, or not the medical industry, but in the medical marijuana movement, is it allowed patients to take their medicine to processors and have the processors process it and return the processed medicine to the patient. And, Pete and I were talking about it, and as best, and help me if I'm misstating this, Floyd, but as best I recall, at least in statute, that applies both to OHA licenses and to OLCC licenses. And so I guess the very last thing I'll say is, I said early on that I thought we had accomplished in Oregon the best melding of the medical system and the adult use system with the least harm to patients. But where it's really pretty ridiculous is in processing. Processing for medical grade oil is exactly the same as processing for adult use oil. There's no reason on God's green earth why we should have to pay $4,000 twice to be able to supply both markets. And I guess, so the last thought I would leave you with is that as with, you know, we're in this exciting transitional time, and it's really, you know, you could get the medical license until you get the adult use license, because when you have the adult use license, you're able, as I mentioned, to be able to sell to patients. I think the OLCC is likely to adopt rules that would permit that. And you can sell, you know, to medical dispensaries, you know, as long as they continue to exist. So that's it. I'll be here to answer other specific questions that you have. Thank you very much.
Well, la-dee-fra! frickin' God!
Welcome back, everybody. It's 20 after. That means it's 4:20 in the Pacific time zone, 7:20 out here in Hollywood, Florida. We got more Oregon marijuana legalization information coming up for you in the next segment. Pioneer Pete, one of the legendary extractors in the state of Oregon, coming up next, and followed by Anthony Taylor, one of the leading medical marijuana activists. Stay tuned.
From dabs to chibas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary. CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
What the hell are we paying you for? Are you stupid?
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Hey, everybody. It's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Here. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, coming up next, we got Pioneer Pete, one of the leading extractors in the state of Oregon, discussing that topic at the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. But before we get to it, I just got to express my disgust at the photos that I'm seeing on Facebook of the Vermont legislators taking a break from discussing marijuana legalization and enjoying free alcohol. Big old lines of champagne and champagne glasses while they decide that you and I should remain criminals. Here's Pioneer Pete.
Good afternoon, almost evening. It's been a good day full of terrific speakers, top quality every single one of them. My name's Pioneer Pete. I'm the president of the Oregon Sun-Grown Growers Guild. I'm the Omnibudsman. Pioneer Pete's no joke, neither is Omnibudsman, even though we've had to make up some certain terms in order to define what I do and the way the world works right now. We've also seen several bureaucracies and even our state legislature making up words and defining terms in ways that are unique over the last 18 months since the passage of Measure 91. You might be wondering, and it's a fair question to ask, why you have a current and former president of the Oregon Sun-Grown Growers Guild addressing you when it comes to extracts and concentrates. Cedar is a top-notch processor who's been of fantastic benefit to people throughout the medical market for years now, and will be transitioning his business into servicing the adult use market as well. I have literally decades of experience under my belt processing alcohols, oils, butters, waxes. We've done various solventless processes. Most recently, CO2, butane. The necklace that I wear is actually a patient testimonial from back in 2009 when I had a patient whose arthritis and neuropathy and neuralgia was so bad that he couldn't do the bead work that he loved. And the doctor basically gave him a prescription that said, this will take the edge off, but it'll make you pretty much unable to function, so go home, watch soap operas, and wait for your time. He didn't find that to be an adequate answer. He came to where I volunteered my time then at Voter Power, and signed up for the OMMP and is my patient. And 6 months later, after using this concentrate that I make, he was able to do this peyote stitch, which is inarguably the most difficult stitch in the world of beadwork. The people at the OSGG know more than a little bit about concentrates and extracts. I actually had somebody ask me recently why they should care about sun-grown because they only smoke indoors. And I said, oh, really? I'm pretty sure that more than 75% of everybody here has had some good sun-grown in the last couple of months, and 95% of us started out on sun-grown whether we knew it or not. And he said, well, you can't tell me that because I only vape. And I said, oh, you mean you have one of these? 2/3 of the cannabis in the state of Oregon is grown within a 50-mile radius of my house, and that's sun-grown, and that's what is in every single one of these. Even the people that don't know they're smoking sun-grown are smoking sun-grown. This is a top-quality CO2 with no flow agents, no additives, nothing else in it, no adulterants. Adulterants are included in the new language as well for processors. Everything has to be on the label, whether you're extracting, concentrating, or you plan on joining those of us in the near future that are going to be compounding. We're on a schedule today. We have another panel coming up before our end of the day feature presentation, so I'm not going to go too far into this, but the bioscience behind this and the chemical science that's involved in this is so deep now. We have proof, among other things, of the entourage effect between cannabinoids and terpenes that are in this plant, and we have another couple of dozen compounds that we just think may affect the way that we process cannabinoids, but it hasn't been thoroughly studied yet. The language as it's written in the law right now does not allow you to adulterate products. However, recombination of cannabinoids and terpenes is legal the way the language is written, and we're going to see a proliferation of products that are not only more targeted towards patients' needs, but more targeted towards adult users' needs as well. I want to address the difference for a second here, because just like Lee's statement that there's really no difference between me making a medical extract or making an adult use extract, there's really no difference between the adult users and the medical users. It's just degrees of use. You talk to any dispensary owner and their adult use clients are coming in asking for things to help with their backaches, asking them for things they can work on during the day, asking them for things they'll help to sleep at night. Those people are all self-medicating, and they have been for a long time. We've just now given them permission to do it legally. And these concentrates, the way the law defines it, is something they'll be able to make for themselves at home in limited quantities with their four adult use plants. But when it comes to the real potent materials, the extracts in the pens, the things that are not arguably more hazardous to produce, they require a level of skill for everybody's safety. Those are going to come from licensed producers, just like they would in any other industry. We will be working with, I hesitate to use the phrase, pharmaceutical grade products in the very near future if we aren't already. The nature of consumption is actually changing because of the abilities that we've reached just in a handful of years under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. In the last 18 months, now that use is legal for, by the state's figures, 4 to 5 times more people, we have that much more interest. We'll see, among other things in the near future here, a discussion about reducing the fees for licensing. Wait, he said what? Reducing the fees for licensing? How is that possible? Since when did a regulatory agency ever make it easier on the people that they regulate. I told the OLCC when we got into this, I also served on the Licensing, Compliance, and Enforcement Committee there, that the numbers that they were looking at were not correct. They estimated too high on the cost per license. They estimated too low on the number of licensees, and I told them so. And they said that I was making numbers up and that they had numbers from real actuarials that were based on other states and division by the population base. And I went, wow, you have numbers from real actuarials. It sounds like you're really making things up now. What do actuarials do? They make numbers up. The numbers aren't any more real just because they came from real actuarials. They were just basically accusing me of being a fake actuarial. I take umbrage at that. Anyway, it turns out that I was right. We're on track for 1,000 licensees in the first 6 months of the year. The review process for licenses they originally proposed to be every other year. I've recommended repeatedly that it be reviewed every year, especially in these initial phases, because this is very volatile. They're looking at collecting $5 million in revenue just from license applicants, and over 200 of those license applicants will be processors and extractors like myself, and that is in the first 6 months of this year. It is a dramatic difference. I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent because we're just talking about a few million dollars here. But I was listening to Lars Larson recently complain that the $40 million we're going to make from marijuana revenue this year isn't that much money and that it wasn't very significant. I really wanted to get on the air and ask him if that meant he thought we should be smoking more pot, but his producer didn't think that was a good idea. So we are changing the nature of consumption, and that is part of the reason that the OLCC's actuarial numbers were off, is because the proliferation of concentrated and dedicated products is higher, and the knowledge of the consumers is higher than it's ever been in the past. That targeted application, whether you're calling it medication or recreation, is something that we're all benefiting from through the extracts and concentrates process. At the end of the day here, it looks like we're going to have about 250 licensees in those categories serving between 400,000 and 500,000 people, and the number will be higher depending on how much tourism business this generates. I'm not trying to give anybody any ideas, but I'm going to guess that some of our neighbors are coming to visit us because we have access to something that they've only dreamed of their entire lives. So we have just a few minutes left for pointed questions from our processors and extractors in the audience, and I'm going to say in closing, I cannot emphasize how important it is to be involved in this process. We have between now and June 3rd to put our comments in. Go to my favorite website, marijuana.oregon.gov, read what they've posted there, and comment on it. Both your objections and your affirmations. Go to the Oregon Health Authority's website, read what their proposed rules are. Go to your local meeting. We're having them in Bend, Eugene, Medford, and Portland over the course of the next 4 weeks. Voice your concerns. Do it twice. Do it before they reveal the final draft rules on May 25th, and do it a second time before the end of the comment period on June 3rd. The comments you put in before May 25th will be comments that they use in the proposed draft. The comments we put in after May 25th are our objections to the proposed draft. And if you want to see something like me being charged twice as much, or Cedar being charged twice as much, you want to see that being prevented, we got to get those comments in, and when they ignore them, we have to re-comment on them in order for it to work. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck with these rules for another year or two. And if you don't know this yet, let me tell you, businesses don't pay taxes. People pay taxes. Every additional expense you put onto the producers and processors is ultimately paid by the end user, bar none. Keep our costs down and allow us to be responsible and do what we're good at, and we'll provide top quality, affordable products for all of the state of Oregon. Thank you.
That's Pioneer Pete speaking at the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference, and very wise words. You know, it's almost counterintuitive to the prohibitionists out there, but what they would like to see for marijuana legalization and what we would like to see for marijuana legalization would best be served by allowing the market to move forward with as few restrictions and onerous provisions as possible. I know they think that's going to lead to massive increases in marijuana use, but I'm telling you, it will not. The people who want to smoke pot have been smoking pot all along. They just want to be legal when they're doing it. When we come back, we've got Anthony Taylor for the patient's perspective when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Legal to listen to all over the world. We're just not sure about France. CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
Growing green to generate more green.
Hello to all you happy herbalizers, smiling trippy hippies, and everyone who believes in freedom and tolerance. This is The Grow Show, and I'm Kyle Cushman.
From food to fuel, from remedy to resource.
Welcome my guest, Ed Rosenthal, the guru of ganja. Let me ask you, right now I hear your lighter clicking. Are you smoking indoor or are you smoking sun grown?
What am I smoking? I'm smoking concentrate.
Way to get out of the answer there. So you're truly like the king, right? You just clap your hands and somebody brings you a bowl and you're all set, right?
I wish that were the case.
The Grow Show with Kyle Cushman, only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show, providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit NewEraCPAs.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the New Era.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 20 minutes to the top of the hour, and we've got more highlights from the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. Anthony Taylor has been a longtime advocate for patients' rights in the state of Oregon. He got the chance to speak at the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference that took place in Eugene, Oregon, just this last Sunday. Turn things over to Anthony.
So a patient, a caregiver, and a grower walk into a bar. That's all I got. I'm going to talk a little bit about growing. I'm also going to follow up on some of the remarks made by Senator Przonski, who has been one of our warriors and champions in the state legislature, and really proud to be able to say that I've worked with him on a couple of things, and I really appreciate his passion. I have seen him stand and and be the only vote against what everybody else is voting for. And as I wrote in one song that I wrote a few years ago, when you stand up for what you believe, you sometimes stand alone. And it gives me great, great pleasure to know Senator Przonski and all the work he's doing down there. He's a great, great warrior for us. So as Anthony said, I've been doing this for a long time. I first started lobbying in Salem in 1983 and have been doing it ever since, with some breaks here and there. You can only take that building so long, and you got to do something else for a session or two to kind of catch your breath. And I really admire those people that are in there every day slugging it out, looking at 2,000-3,000 pieces of legislation. I think in the 2015 session, those of us that were in the trenches probably read in excess of 3,000 pages of legislation and tried to make sense of it all so we could come here and explain it to you folks. So, as Senator Przanski said, in this last session we passed a number of bills. The three main ones I'm going to kind of talk about here as they pertain to growing and infused products were House Bill 4014, Senate Bill 1511, and Senate Bill 1598. The first one, House Bill 4014, removed all the residency requirements for OLCC and OHA licensees and registrants, except for patients. So while somebody from Washington can come into this state and buy their commercial marijuana and take it home with them, a patient from Delaware can't come into the state of Oregon and take his medicine home with him. So there are some things like that that we need to take care of and address at the patient level. but 4014 also made it very clear that while in 2015 the legislature passed plant limits for medical marijuana growers, they didn't intend to limit the number of patients that could be taken care of at those addresses. So they clarified that language and now say that as long as you stay under the plant limits of 48, 96, 12, or 24, you can grow for as many patients as you feel you can adequately take care of. And now with the personal agreement that's out there kind of floating right now until one actually gets drafted and we can kind of see what it's going to look like, that's going to help with everybody. So patient knows what they're getting, the grower knows what is expected of them, and I think that'll work to help with patients, because one of the things that we noticed, if you look at the numbers provided by the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, is that as many as 30,000 patients could have been affected by those plant limits. And so this language, along with language that says OLCC will allow the same sort of thing, is going to be kind of a safety net for all these patients that may lose their growers in this process of getting everybody under the new plant limits. So that's a good thing. So for instance, if you're growing for 90, if you have your address grandfathered in and you're growing 96 plants, you could technically be taking care of 96 patients. Depends on your expertise as a grower. And many growers already do this. They've got their 8 patients or their 16 or 20 patients or whatever, but they're also helping out other patients that aren't even on their register. So being able to grow, take care of as many patients as you can take care of is really good. A 4014 also had language that prohibits cities and counties to adopt ordinances that interfere with an adult or patient's right to produce, process, or possess what they're allowed to possess by law. So some of these kinds of languages are going to take some time to work through the process at the local level because, for instance, in Yamhill County, which is where I live, they had to take a breath and write their land use compatibility statement ordinance for cannabis. So that took about 6 weeks. But now it's a go. And so these sorts of things, as we get through them and deal with things on the local level, it's going to benefit the patients. Now, I know there's a lot of concern around land use issues. And I'll tell you that in 2012, when I jumped back into this fray, I never expected to become a land use expert. So I didn't. But Robert Graham's going to help with that and talk to you about that. The other interesting thing about 4014 is it It requires the OHA to put together a work group to for physicians and the healthcare community that deals with marijuana and report back to the legislature and get some of the clinical guidelines set up. For a long time, we felt that the clinics, when it comes to patients and dealing with patients, are going to be an integral part of integrating cannabis into the healthcare landscape in Oregon. Because if we do it right and raise these patients, these clinics, to the level where other physicians in the Oregon healthcare networks can refer patients, then that really helps, and that begins the process of integrating cannabis into the medical thing. So in 1511, that is the one that allows for growers, medical growers that want to transition to OLCC and take their patients with them. This is going to be a little complicated until OLCC gets the rules written on it, but I think this is going to be another way that patients are going to have an additional safety net, because one of the incentives for bringing your patients with you is you get a little bit more canopy. So if you're a tier two outdoor producer and you've got 40,000 square feet and you want to bring your 40 or 50 patients with you, you can do that. And as long as you're, you know, recording and reporting everything, it should work pretty smoothly. There's some glitches about how the product produced by the medical side of the garden gets into the supply stream, but we'll get those worked out here, and then I think it's going to be a really good way to capture some of these patients that are beginning to lose their growers. I spoke at a meeting a couple of weeks ago where people were really concerned about these plant limits and the ability to still service their patients and how to work through that. And so there are paths through that so that you don't have to tell all your patients to find a new grower, but you will have to do some reporting, whether it's OLCC or OHA. OLCC, of course, is a little tougher, a little more stringent than OHA, but nonetheless, you're going to have to report to one of those agencies if you're participating in the commercial aspects of marijuana production, whether it's medical or recreational. However, if you're growing for yourself and one family member at your own address, that doesn't apply. As long as you don't transfer anything or intend to transfer anything into a dispensary, you do not have to report, as long as your 12 plants are under, grown at the address where both patients live. You start transferring, though, you got to create an online account by June 1st and report what you're doing. Now, on the OHA side, it's really just event-based. So by June 1st, you have to create your online account. By June 10th, you have to submit your first report. I'm not sure all the framework is in place for this yet, but it will be. And so, as I said, it's event-based. So on May 15th, you planted 48 plants. So that's your first report. And on the next month, yeah, they're still growing. That's your second report. And on your third month, you pulled three of them because they were rotten or whatever happened, or they were invaded by spider mites. That's what your report reflects. So you took down three and you replaced them with three. All those events have to be reported, and then at harvest, you have to report what you did with the product after you harvested it, and you have to keep it segregated. There's a number of new rules for medical growers about segregating things. You have to make sure that all your plants are ID'd for the patient, and that your four plants that you're growing recreationally are kind of separated. And then once you've harvested, you have to separate all the product into bins with patient-specific numbers on them. I know it's not how we do it. We normally pull all our plants or harvest in phases or whatever, and then it's all put together in one big bin at the end of harvest, separated by strains. And if a patient comes in and wants 2 ounces of lemon kush or you know, Bubba Kush or whatever it might be, you give it to them, but now it all has to be separated. The downside is part of the enforcement is if you don't follow some of these rules, you risk losing the whole garden. So be mindful of that. Make sure you get your accounts established and start reporting. And for those outdoor growers, you may, this is kind of tricky. If you're just growing for yourself, you're only allowed to possess 24 ounces. Six mature plants, but 24 ounces in your possession, that's all you're allowed to have. But if you're a designated grower, if you've been designated to produce marijuana by somebody else, you can keep everything you produce up to 12 pounds a plant. Now, that doesn't mean that you can produce 3 pounds a plant and bring in 9 pounds from someplace else. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're allowed, finally, at a certain level, to keep what you produce and to keep it safely. So that's great for medical growers because they've always been stuck. With the dispensary program, they had an outlet if they had a good relationship with their dispensary where they could take their product. But now as we see dispensaries start to become fewer and fewer as they transition into OLCC, that market becomes less and less available. So this ability to possess 12 pounds a plant really protects those medical growers as they've never been protected before. It's 6 pounds a plant if you're an indoor grower. If you're growing in a greenhouse and doing light depth, that's an outdoor grow. But if you put lights on mature plants in that greenhouse, it's now an indoor grow, and you're only allowed 6 pounds per plant. So the light deppers, you have to keep that in mind. Anytime you put lights on mature plants, it's now an indoor grow, and you're subject to those limits rather than the outdoor grow limits. So keep that in mind. There, you know, there was a lot of discussion initially about the tiers, indoor and outdoor, and there needed to be one created for greenhouse. So that'll probably happen next session because there are some certain, you know, aspects of growing in greenhouses that really need to be addressed. And light depth is one of those. One interesting thing is the legislature put into a language that says that local jurisdictions can, in fact, repeal an ordinance they adopt to prohibit marijuana. They can repeal that, actually. But the reason they put that language in there is in case they do repeal an ordinance that they adopted prohibiting licenses or OHA people, is so that the OLCC and the OHA know when they can start issuing licenses after that ordinance has been repealed. Medical grow sites. You're required to report what you're doing. And so if you're a patient grower at a multiple grower address, you're required to report to OHA. Create an account and report to OHA what's going on every month with your 6 plants. So if you have a garden, for instance, that's got 16 patients and they're all their own growers, that means the OHA is going to look at 16 different reports for the same address. So they adopted language that allows multiple grower gardens to designate a person responsible for that reporting so that you don't have to mess with it. And this is big because many gardens have patients that list themselves as growers that have never been to the garden. And so it'd be hard for them to report. And so allowing one person to make those reports, I think, is a good thing, and it's going to make life easier for everybody, including the agencies that have to read all those reports. Okay, so for recreational growers, the OLCC has really done a great job of trying to address or trying to create a safety net for patients for the next couple of years by creating these micro canopies and allowing you to bring your patients with you. I think this is really important, and I really appreciate the OLCC is taking more care for patients than the OHA ever has. And I think they need to be applauded and respected for that.
Anthony Taylor is one of the leading medical marijuana advocates in the state of Oregon, and some great information there from the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. I'm Radical Russ, live from Hollywood, Florida. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll shut down the show, say our goodbyes, and preview tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. Stick around.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Being green is good. Growing green is good. Making green is great. CannabisRadio.com.
Ganjapreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Ganjapreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Ganjapreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Ganjapreneur.com.
Well, folks, that's all the time we've got for today's show. Thanks for joining us here. We'll be back tomorrow live from Hollywood, Florida, with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers!
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed.